WGN. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch, and we'll get back to some of your pranks and pancakes and waffles afterwards. Some great texts coming in on the line. Well, let's get Tom Fortino on right now. He's the founder and principal of Alpha Wealth Group and co-host of This Week in Wealth with Elise Klink, Sundays at 7 a.m. Tom, thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me, John. How are you doing today?
Good. We chatted on Tuesday. The market had been flat for 2 weeks and then went down into the tank. And since then, better news. Yesterday was like a rally out of nowhere that just kept on going. Today started down, but is buoyed back up. What's driving this?
Well, I mean, we're seeing earnings. I think over 70% of the S&P are beating earnings. There's still a lot more to come out. Over 50% have reported. And, you know, you see in the big names, I mean, the big techs, the Microsofts, Meta, go down the line, the ones that have done well. Now, we still have Apple next week, the big kahuna, the largest company by cap-weighted company on the planet. And so we'll see if that's going to be, I think, what do they call it, the Star Wars?
I forget that.
It's going to be... It's May 4th. It's coming out.
Oh, May the 4th. I got you there. Yeah, that'll be the big one. So some good earnings. And obviously, we got the PCE number today. Remind people what that is.
Well, it's an indicator that the Fed looks at. You know, it's the cousin or the stepbrother to the CPI. It's still an indicator on inflation. They prefer to look at that as an indicator versus the CPI. And so it has less maybe housing in it. It also has an adjustment. They call it when there's substitutes. And so, in other words, it makes a consideration for rather than steak, maybe people are buying hamburger. So it puts different things into it. And so they use the PC again. It's a gauge for inflation, and you know it was a little lower, but the core PCE. Was still a little stubborn. I think there's some concerns about that.
Yeah, for sure. But we'll take down anywhere we get it, right?
Mm-hmm. And wages, it's trending down.
Wages, though, still pretty high, which, again, it's hard to be upset about because that's great that workers are making more, but it can be perpetually fueling this inflation, right? If companies still need to feel like they need to pay their workers more to keep up with other competitors, That could be not such a good thing.
That's absolutely correct, John. I mean, when you're looking at input costs, energy, of course, is very significant. Wages, payroll, that's significant. So, when your input costs are higher, you've got to do something on the back end. And that's why we've been seeing a number of these companies that have continued to have higher prices. I mean, that's still a little bit of a concern to me and some headwinds. But I think... we're going to see, but I think we may start to see some of those things come down. We're seeing some, as far as the jobs numbers, the wages, we may see a little bit of a pulling back on those numbers, I think, going forward. We'll see that certainly soon.
How important is it to have a winning month? And I guess what I mean by that is, of course, we want a month ahead of the next month anytime we can get it. That'd be great if every time it happened, but we know that doesn't happen. But in terms of like the psychology of how markets go, because that often drives a lot of things.
Yeah.
Does it matter to you that we bank another winning month if we had like January, March, and then now April? Does that tell a story, or is that really overly simplistic and doesn't matter moving forward?
No, it does. Absolutely. The psyche has something to do with it. I mean, ultimately, you know, we're going to see throughout the next quarter what happens. I mean, earnings are the things that ultimately drive it. But you look at some people in it's called momentum investors. They're just just looking at the momentum of the stocks. They're not concerned about a lot of the fundamentals that a lot of people will look at. You know, it's been up 3 out of the last 4 months. These are certainly good things. The market, you know, you can't fight the tape. You've heard the phrase, right? And so when the market's going up, you want to participate in that, and sometimes you want to be involved in that. So to your point, yes, absolutely, that plays a role in the market, and we're seeing this market continue to rally. 3 out of the last 4 months, it's been up.
I'm reading a fascinating book. It's so fascinating, I actually forgot the title of it right now. I'm going to look it up, but I do really enjoy it. And it talks about how if you take like 100 years' worth of data and you pull out great months on the S&P 500, there's only like 60 months, and if you average all those months together, that the mark that they made over 10% in those months. There's only 60 of them, and you take all the rest of the months, like the other 1,200 months during that 100-year period, and they're up like 0.01%. And the overall point was is that you can, if you miss rallies like yesterday, or if you miss a good month, you miss out on a lot. And I guess it just speaks to the idea, well, you've talked about a lot of the show. Sometimes the best strategy is have that plan, have that dollar cost averaging, and don't try and do too much here.
Well, it's the old timing the market versus time in the market, right? And that's a true statement. I mean, nobody, I don't care what anyone says, no one can time the market. Now, you can make adjustments and you can do some things, but the average investor, you really just have to have a solid, balanced plan that makes sense for you, and you stick to it. Again, you may make some minor changes. If you say, well, I want to get a little defensive, I'm going to raise some cash 5 or 10%. Those are things you can do without really stinging yourself, so you're still participating. You always have to be very careful. But you know, as you said, John, it always comes back to, you know, have a solid investment plan you can stick to.
Tom, let's talk a little banking, because obviously we have the two failures of the banks in March, SVB, the big one, of course, or one of the two big ones. Then we kind of have this like calm period. Calm's not the right word, but like confidence restored for most regional banks. It's been up and down, and we're getting reports now. Many are missing earnings. Some are beating. We talked to Busey Bank earlier this week. They beat expectations, and their outflows aren't too bad. Anyways, a long way of saying that I thought that things had eased a bit. What is happening at First Republic? What is different about that bank that you know of that is causing this real crisis within what's happening there?
Well, it's a combination of a number of things, and it's hitting other banks too, but it's, you know, you had $100 billion of deposits that were pulled, and it's the same story from before, the fact that, you know, that the treasuries they hold, the values of those have gone down because interest rates have gone up, because you're holding treasuries that have low rates, and of course, their values go down. On top of that, they've got a loan, you know, and technically loans are an asset, of course, for a bank. If you're going to, because there's been discussion of someone purchasing First Republic. So if they've got so many, I think $22 billion in loan, and they've got unrealized losses on the loans, that's another concern. What is the, you know, the loans? How solid are those loans? So it's really a confluence of things. And we're to a point, I think the last, which you probably heard, is we're talking about a Fed, the Fed coming in, because they're not, you know, there was an infusion of cash from the large banks, $30 billion of deposits. Mm-hmm. That still didn't take care of it.
Right.
So now we're now we're looking at a point where no one wants to buy the assets of the bank. That looks like a situation. So it's pretty problematic.
Right.
We're going to see very soon.
And the FDIC will, of course, if they need to, and there's rumors that they are going to. I don't think they're confirmed yet. We don't know for sure that they're going to step in. So, of course, it's the same song and dance. If you have less than $250,000, you're fine. You don't have to worry. The FDIC's paid every cent of that ever since it has existed. But then you start wondering, okay, are we on shaky ground again? I guess it's a long way of saying is, our regional banks, the ones that have weathered the storm, they don't want to see anything like this. They don't need customers rattled again a month and a half later.
Well, definitely not. And this is not a good sign. Of course, we don't know. I mean, there's so much digging that needs to be done. I kind of use the analogy. It's like when you purchase maybe a home and you're going to redo the home, rehab it, and you go and you start pulling off the drywall and you just keep finding more and more things that you didn't anticipate. That's kind of some of the things with some of these regional banks we may be seeing, because there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot that still has to be done to really determine, okay, what's going on with some of these, not only the loans that they have on their books, the, you know, the treasuries that they're holding on, you know, as far as their assets, so, and then the deposits. So just really, like I said, a number of things that are going on that there still may be more to come.
When people then immediately, and I get why people do this, a lot of us lived through it. 2008, it's an easy comparison to say, uh-oh, here we go. But they are different things, right, Tom? I mean, not to get too into the weeds about it, but 2008 was a lot of real cruddy mortgage loans that were being bundled together. And then when people can't afford their homes, we're talking about a catastrophic, long, wide, deep failure versus banks that own, you know, what are effectively good investments. They own treasuries. They just have a maturity problem. They have to sell them to get cash quickly, and they're just not worth as much as when they bought them. They are different animals, right?
Well, there are. I mean, you know, to your point, John, as far as what you're holding, are they bad loans? Are they some decent loans? What do you have on your books? They were leveraged quite a bit, as we know. The joke used to be back in 2008, if you can breathe on a mirror, you're going to get a mortgage. And so things were pretty bad back then, you know. And so they were overly leveraged, and not only overly leveraged, then what happened was this one domino fell. You know, it just took everything down. So that was, yeah, that was a little different back then.
It was. Okay. Just trying to put people's minds at ease maybe a little bit. Consumer sentiment. We saw that number go down to a pretty low level. It had kind of popped up unexpectedly here and there. Is consumer sentiment tied to gas prices and inflation, or is it tied to a real sense of where the economy is going? Or I guess, is it up to each individual person who they ask? What do you take out of consumer sentiment numbers?
Well, I mean, all of these indicators are important. Consumer sentiment is definitely important, a part of it. You know, it can be a self-fulfilling prophecy, and to a certain extent, like you were saying before, is psyche part of it? Yeah, absolutely. And so there's, you know, there's some truth to what's happening here. I think there's a reason for the consumer sentiment being down because of the things that are happening, obviously inflation being a big factor. We'll see where that leads, but it absolutely is an indicator, and it's an indicator that's used by many people in this industry to determine where they think the market's going, and so that's how they may invest based on some of those things. So it's important.
It is important. I was also, you know, and I'm still fairly new to this financial world, having just hosted Your Money Matters now for a year and 2 months or so, but a lot of talk about not only the inflation number we get each month, but the importance of inflation expectations. And part of me goes, well, what do I care where people think inflation's going? What does that matter to anything? But a lot of people say, no. The expectation of inflation can be just as damaging because it can actually lead and perpetuate inflation. That's bonkers to me.
Well, it comes down to two. Are you going to spend the next dollar? So now the consumer that drives the economy, see, I mean, all of these things, again, relate. And so when consumer confidence is down, when you have expectations are low, again, the reality of maybe spending is going to go down. It just does. There's a high correlation between those.
That's a good point, that it's not just in our brains. It then relates to what our hands do in our wallet. Yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm. I guess that should have been easier for me to see, but I needed Tom Fortino to tell me. All right, so the Fed policy coming, the meeting next week, I think we're still holding steady at people expecting a quarter point hike even after the data we've gotten.
Pretty much. I think it's baked in. I don't think there's any big concern. And that's why you're seeing, again, that's part of too why the market's where it's at right now. I don't think there's anybody that's going to be surprised.
Yeah. And that also goes into the idea that I always just find amazing. It's like now if let's say they didn't raise rates next week, right? Then you might have people worried. And it's so funny because that's what they've been begging for. But then all of a sudden, if they do it and it's not what's expected, then you go, well, what do they know that's under the hood that we don't know, right?
Right. Yeah. It's the good news is bad news is good news. It's all of those things that come into play in the market. So that's why, you know, there's a market because, you know, there's someone always on either end and determining while one person's buying, the other person's selling, you have different opinions. And so this is it. This is what we have to deal with.
I feel like Tom's teaching me Econ 101 today, and I appreciate it, Tom. Our listeners do, too, this week in Wealth Sunday at 7 a.m. Before I let you go, Tom, I do want to ask, today is kind of the last day if you want to get a better I-bond rate, which, of course, we're going to get the new number. If you buy it today, it's north of 6% still, I think 6.59.
Right.
You still get that for 6 months. It's not like you just get a day of it. So for some people, they see value in it. But there is the warning that it will go down 6 months later to whatever the number we find out Monday. And there's penalties if you pull out before 5 years of the last couple months of interest. Are you steering people to maybe look at that, but not, you know, maybe go treasury bills instead? What are you looking at with those two ideas?
Well, I mean, if you want complete liquidity, I would never say an I-bond's a bad, I shouldn't say never. I would probably not say at this point I-bonds are a bad deal. You do have protection of principal. You know, if you do liquidate it prior to 1 year, you get your principal back, you just lose all your interest.
Right.
And so after 1 year, you know, you lose up to 3 months interest. And after five, as you were saying, it's all there. So I don't think anytime you're saving, putting money aside, I'm always on your side.
Yeah, you're right.
So I think it's still a good thing.
Yeah, Treasury bills, still, we still see that two-year rate above north of that 4%. Still an option for people.
Absolutely.
All right.
I agree.
All right, Tom Fortino from Alpha Wealth Group. We appreciate your time. Oh, before I let you go, Tom, waffles or pancakes? That's the question of the day. And we are dead. We are 50-50 right now on the News Click question. Where are you going with?
Uh-oh. Are you saying I'm the deciding one here?
No, you're not the deciding one. I'll just throw you into the pool with everyone else.
All right. Wow. Boy, that is so hard.
Right?
I'm sorry. I got to go with waffles. Belgian waffles, though.
Okay, Belgian waffles. Is it because you get the syrup and the butter and the little cups on the waffle, like a delivery
That's
system?
That's good stuff.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right.
A little whipped cream.
Oh, a little whipped cream on that. Tom Fortino's weighed in. We'll hear him on 7 a.m. Pick up that topic on Sunday with Elise, okay,
we'll
Tom?
Do it.
Yeah, for sure.
I love it.
7 a.m.
I do it.
On Sunday. That's Tom Fortino, founder and principal, Alpha Wealth Group. Steve Bug joins us now. We've chatted in with him a few times on Your Money Matters. And welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch, my friend.
Thanks for having me, John. Happy Friday.
For sure. And you're from Great Lakes Credit Union, the CEO. And I thought we'd let this other audience here listen and hear a little bit more about what you guys do. And first of all, what a credit union is. So let's start with the basics, Steve. What is a credit union?
Sure. A credit union is a cooperative. And so we have members instead of customers at credit unions. And I think it's interesting to point out that there's 227 credit unions in the state of Illinois.
Whoa.
And there's 4,813 nationally. So Illinois holds about 5% of the total credit unions nationally. And when you talk about credit unions in Illinois, we hold $69 billion in assets. And at Great Lakes Credit Union, we have $1.3 billion of those assets. So that's about 2% of the assets in the state that Great Lakes Credit Union holds.
That sounds really good to me. That sounds like a lot of money, over $1 billion. And some might say, oh, look at that, another greedy institution. No, no, those are assets held. And in fact, credit unions are nonprofits, right?
That's absolutely right. And I think an interesting point is that the 10 largest banks spent over $75 billion in just 1 year buying back shares of their own stock. So if you think about that in relationship to the credit union size, that's three times higher than the total credit union earnings. And certainly since we're not for profit and we have members, we can't buy back stock because we, in essence, would buy out our members' shares. So we reinvest our profits into things like updating our services and technology.
So it goes back into the company and it essentially goes back into saving customers' money.
Absolutely.
Okay, so that all sounds great. I'm wondering then, well, then what are the deficiencies of a credit union? Maybe that's not the right way to put it, but what do you have that banks don't have? So do you have ATMs?
We have ATMs. Yes, we do.
Do you have them in a lot of different places, even though you maybe are just one of many in Illinois?
So we do. We're actually part of a national shared branching co-op network. And so think of a shared branch as an extension of your local credit union. So nationally, credit unions work together to provide their branches and ATM networks to members of credit unions throughout the country. So it expands our branch presence, but it also expands our ATM network. And at Great Lakes Credit Union, in addition to the shared branching network, we offer our members no out-of-network ATM fees and ATM rebates. So members really, John, can use an ATM anywhere for free if they're a Great Lakes member.
Okay. I'm just trying to think of where else I use ATMs, and the only thing that comes to mind is Vegas, which is probably not a good thing to say. But if I'm in Las Vegas and I want to spend $100 on a roulette table, I can find an ATM there.
Absolutely, you can.
Okay, that's good to know. All right, that's a check. Okay, what about like an app or like doing all digital banking? I imagine that's up to date here in the 21st century for credit unions?
Absolutely. So Great Lakes, we have 13 branch locations in the Chicagoland area. We have a very robust online and mobile app. And so if you think about the mobile app and doing your banking 24/7, whenever you want, however you want, you can do that online or mobile, or certainly you can visit any of our branches during regular hours or even call our contact center.
Okay, what about like Zelle and like digital payments like that?
Yep, great point. We offer Zelle to our credit union members at Great Lakes Credit Union, and we've really seen that product take off over the last several years as that payment space has really lit up.
Okay, like obvious things like direct deposit, all that works fine?
Direct deposit, yep. Checking accounts, saving accounts, money market, certificates, investment accounts, you name it. Credit unions typically have those same bank products and services. We also offer not only to consumers, but we do a lot in the commercial space and in the small business banking space as well.
Okay, so business banking too. What about like car loans, auto loans? Do you service those too? And
auto loans, personal loans, mortgage loans. Also, we have alternative to payday lending for those members that live paycheck to paycheck or need some help to get by. And instead of going to a payday lender, we can provide our members an option for a short-term loan as well.
Well, that's huge. Actually, I want to stick on that point for a second because so many Americans live paycheck to paycheck. And you're right, those predatory loans are no good and they can get people further and further into debt. So they have to be a customer first, though. So that's a good way to get people in is like, hey, this is an opportunity just in case you're having trouble one day. Great Lakes Credit Union can offer you maybe this little short, I almost called it a bridge loan, but that has negative connotations, a short little loan that doesn't have the crazy rates that's going to bankrupt someone.
Absolutely. And for Great Lakes Credit Union, we serve low income. So 51% of our membership is considered low income. The other half is mid-market and upscale. So we have products and services, John, that really provides the plethora of those opportunities for consumers to do their banking with us. One thing that is unique to Great Lakes Credit Union, we're one of six credit unions nationally that has a HUD-certified counseling program, and that's free to anyone in the community. You don't have to be a Great Lakes member or a member of any credit union. We provide that service for free to anybody in the community. It's a grant-based program. And also, that fits our philosophy of Great Lakes, of really financial empowerment for everyone and anyone within the communities that we serve.
Okay, that all sounds like pretty good stuff. Someone wants to know then, this is almost like teeing up a question I have for you. So why would we use a credit union over a bank? That's a simple question, but I make the pitch.
Yeah, so great question. We get that asked a lot. It's the value proposition that we provide back to our members and to the communities. We're very philanthropic. We're a community-based organization. We have a volunteer board of directors, so they help strategically guide the credit union forward. And we're an alternative to banking, right? So we provide a lot of the same products and services. We create great value, and we have those services that others don't, such as the HUD counseling services, financial literacy programs. We also have programs for the youth. For example, April is Youth Savings Month. So we teach youngsters on how to save and try to get them into that behavior of understanding the importance of saving. So our philosophy really is that financial empowerment and then making our products and services work as a solution to the need that our member has.
630 wants to know, how about refinancing?
Yes, so we do refinancing not only on mortgages, but auto loans as well. We can do debt consolidation loans. We also have home equity lines of credit and fixed rate home equities. So best bet is to go to our website, glcu.org, has our products and services listed, but certainly you can even get an appointment with somebody in our branch or call us and we can put you in contact with one of our great loan officers.
A lot of times when you hear banking commercials, you hear the really quick language at the end, FDIC insured. I think everyone should slow down a little bit now and reiterate FDIC insured. Do credit unions fall under that, or is there are you federally protected in other ways?
Yes, we are backed by the full faith of the federal government. Great Lakes Credit Union is insured by the NCUA, which is the equivalent of the FDIC on the bank side.
Okay. GLCU.org, you've been in the community for a long time, haven't you?
85 years, John.
It's a good track record. Steve, thanks for breaking down all the questions for credit unions and taking our listeners' questions. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, we'll talk again soon. GLCU.org for all things Great Lakes Credit Union. Interesting. Someone chimed in saying, my husband banks with the credit union. They don't have Zelle. This sounds awesome. Yeah, okay. So some do, some don't. Great Lakes does. All right, let's get a look at the Wintrust Business Minute. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. The Manufacturing Innovation Incubator M-Hub is moving to Chicago's Near West Side. Operations will move there this fall after renovations to the hub's newly purchased building at 240 North Ashland. The old factory will be rehabbed into a $50 million project, transforming the site into an 80,000-square-foot innovation center. It'll give M-Hub more space than its current home in River West to accelerate the development of new products for hundreds of companies. It'll use tax increment financing from the City of Chicago to help fund the project, along with other private and public funding. The new facility will be functionally about 50% bigger than its current space. The number of workers returning to downtown Chicago offices is up again. Real estate technology firm Castle Systems says based on security card swipes, office attendance is up to 51%. That's the most people back at work since before the pandemic began in 2020. Chicago's slightly above the national average of 49%. Houston tops the list of big cities at 61%. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
All right, the business of food. Here's Steve Alexander.
Yes, it's a Mr. Fizz Friday. I'm going to ask him if I can put my tomatoes out yet. We're sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience your life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Hello, Mr. Fizz, Jim Fizzell. Today is Arbor Day, isn't it?
You got it right. Be sure you go out and plant a tree or attend a ceremony.
Okay, and Monday's a big day.
It is. May Day. And there's one thing that Jane and I have done for a long time. We know a lot of shut-ins, and as we get older, there are more and more of them. We'll go get a bouquet of flowers, go hang it on their door, ring the doorbell, and run, just like we used to do when we were kids. They never know where the flowers came from, but it's a nice little treat for them. So you can try that, and make sure it's anonymous. That's the fun part of it. But we want to talk about gardening today. When is it safe to plant? We're getting there. The frost-free date actually is next Friday, May 5, and that means there's a 50% chance that we're going to be frost-free from that time on. But there's also a 50% chance that we're going to have a frost or freeze. And the way things have been going around here the last week, we've had a few frosts and freezes. So I don't know this year whether it's a good gamble to get out there early or not.
Can I put out my tomatoes yet?
Nope. Nope. The latest date of last frost is May 30, so if you want to be perfectly sure that you're not going to have stuff frozen up, or if you can't protect it when it's out there growing by putting a blanket over it or something, you need to wait till about Memorial Day. Now, you can set some things out now. There are semi-hardy plants or hardy plants that can be set out now because they will take a frost or a freeze. Petunias. You see petunias out all the time now. These are frost-free, and they actually survive over the winter, even though they're not really hardy perennials, but they do that sometimes. Now, snapdragons, pansies can go out, verbena. In the vegetable garden, broccoli, any of the coles, cabbage, cauliflower can be planted because they will stand a freeze. Greens, spinach, things like that, peas, carrots, radishes, things that you can sow seed, that can be done right now.
But not my tomatoes?
Nope.
Mr. Fizz, Jim Fizzell, from the farm to your belly, today's National Blueberry Pie Day. I'm Steve Alexander, and that's the business of food on 720 WGN.
The one-of-a-kind spring show back at the Mart this weekend. Kathleen Hogan joins us now to tell us all about it. Kathleen, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right, one-of-a-kind spring show. Who's going to be there? What sorts of stuff can I get there?
Yeah, we are so excited to host. This is our seventh annual show. It's here at the Chicago Merchandise Mart. It's open to the public, and it'll be held Friday, April 28th through Sunday, April 30th. We're going to have over 300 talented artists and makers from the U.S. And this year, we're also going to invite or have Canadians, a Colombian artist, and someone from Mexico bringing their incredible handmade items and their stories of their inspiration, which I'd love to add to my gifts. We're also really showcasing 40 up-and-coming artists that have never been seen at the one-of-a-kind show in our very popular emerging market. It's just a great opportunity to get ahead of your Mother's Day or Father's Day or graduation shopping, finding thousands of handmade pieces. We span 20 categories, including fine art, jewelry, fashion, photography, ceramics, bath and body, and so much more. In addition to that, we'll also have a gourmet section, which nobody wants to miss. They're going to be doing samples and of confections, baked goods, soups and sauces, everything that you can find.
I guess it's in the name, one of a kind. This is stuff you right. won't find anywhere else.
That's right. That's right. And if fine art or if art is not your thing, there's other things to do. You can listen to the Old Town School of Folk Music. They're going to be doing live music on this patio stage throughout the show. And then we're adding the Flower Child, which is a local Chicago florist. We'll be here offering bouquets for Mother's Day and all the different holidays. So there's just a lot to do under one roof.
It's big, obviously, for people that want to get a chance, and it's fun to do, but it's also probably huge for these artists.
It is. It's for some of them, it's their biggest selling opportunity of the year, and it's been a tough couple of years or quite a few number of years. So yeah. It's a great opportunity to support these artists.
How does it work with the artists? Are they like, do they buy the tent and then they have the they're able to sell? Do they get, you guys get like a share of the pro? Like, how does it all get put together?
Sure. They apply to be in the show. So all the artists have applied and been selected by a selection committee. And then yes, they purchase kind of their space. So within the Merchandise Mart, it's just, we have hard walls that separate them, and it's just like a little, a space for them, and it becomes their sort of their store for the weekend.
That's cool.
And then they take all the proceeds themselves. So that's their own sales that they do.
That's good to know. Yeah, I like, a lot of people wonder how that works behind the scenes. And so the artists right. that are there not only have great things, but they've also bought into it. So, that puts a little more onus on us. If we say buy local and we are committed to buying, not always shopping on Amazon for things. All right, let's put our money where our mouth is and go to one of these events, because this is how these artists end up making their money for the year. These street fairs, stuff like this. And to have 300 artists under one roof is pretty unique in Chicago.
It is. It is. It's their livelihood, and they go typically from show to show. And it's really important that we support them, because, I truly believe they are what keeps this economy going.
Yeah. Why do you care so much about this? What is your, do you have a background in this, or you just have always been interested in this?
I have. I've always been an advocate for art. Artists specifically, but I've been doing this a long time, and I love to be able to provide an environment where they can, communicate and sell their wares directly to the public. And I'm telling you, to be able to do it inside the Merchandise Mart is a dream.
Yeah. And, really, with each one-of-a-kind piece, like you said earlier, there really is a story. And then that story goes from the artist to when you buy it to the person down the street who comes over for a drink and they say, oh, that's cool, what's that? That person gets to tell that story. The story is almost as much fun as the artwork itself.
It is. It adds, and I've done it myself, it adds such a layer to the gift that you're giving, or to the collection that, if you've purchased a piece of art, I love to understand kind of what went behind it. And I think of that artist every time I look at it. So I think it's just a great connection to have.
Yeah, you talk to the right person. My mother is an artist and did shows for many years painting. So did my grandfather, a watercolor painter.
Oh,
yeah. So, and I have his work.
Wow.
I am so lucky to have a lot of his work and my mom's work hanging up on the walls of my house. And you're right. Each person comes over, they're like, ooh, what's that? I'm like, well, I got a story for you. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, you'll have to come down and see the artwork here and see what new collections you can add to that.
All right. Where can people go for more information?
Yep. They can either buy tickets here at the show directly, or they can do it on our website, oneofakindshowchicago.com.
All right,
Kathleen. Tickets are good for all 3 days.
Sorry to interrupt you there. That's great, Kathleen. Before I let you go, waffles or pancakes? We're really tight here on the show.
Ooh, pancakes.
Pancakes, okay. Kathleen yeah. Hogan, that's a good answer. Another good one. That's my vote, too. One of a kind spring show at the Mart this week in April 28th through the 30th.